Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett, and we are here to do your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired April the 27th, 2012, take back on April the 24th in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the go-home show for Extreme Rules, WWE's final chance to sell Extreme Rules to us out there, and we will be covering that show live right here on .net this Sunday. Usually it's Jason Powell and I, but I have somewhere I have to be this Sunday night, so Jake Barnett is stepping in. He's on the on-deck circle for me right now. He's going to be pinch-hitting for me. He and Jason will have all the coverage of that event, as well as an audio review of that show afterwards, but that show, like most of the audio we do each and every week, will be for our members only. And so those audios that we do each week, an audio review of WWE's Raw, TNA Impact Wrestling, as well as a Q&A from Jason Powell on Fridays, my Wednesday audio slant, the .NET Countdown with Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett also on Wednesdays, and then Jason Powell and I get together on Thursdays for .NET Weekly. It's our flagship show, cover all the news of the week, often break things that haven't even made their way to the site yet. If you want access to this Sunday's audio show, review of Extreme Rules, and access to all of that audio, plus be able to follow that coverage along on the ad-free version of the site, and have access to our .NET member forum and .NET member blog section, now's the time to get signed up to be a .NET member. Simply head on over to ProWrestling.net, look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up page, click there, and we'll get you started. $7.50 will get you 30 days. If you want to go ahead and take the annual option, $5.50 a month. Save you $2 a month when you take that year-long option. And it's a great time to get signed up because, Brock Lesnar is back in WWE. He's having his first match this Sunday. And that annual option will take you all the way through next year's WrestleMania. So it's a great time. If you've been thinking about doing it, now's the time to pull that trigger and get signed up to become a .NET member and have access to everything there. And so, Jake, this Sunday is Extreme Rules. You will be watching this show, but I'm going to take you out of that role for just a minute and ask you this question. It's usually the question we start off these go-home shows with. WWE made their final pitch for Extreme Rules for this Sunday. Do you think, did you come into this show, what excitement level were you in coming into this show, and did they raise that coming out of this show? Are you more excited now? In other words, was it an effective go-home show for Extreme Rules?
I actually was, fairly excited for the pay-per-view after Monday's Raw. I wasn't thrilled with the main event segment. I'm just not thrilled with the way that they're presenting Brock Lesnar at the moment, but I was still pretty pumped about the pay-per-view. I liked what they did with Bryan and Sheamus on Monday. I liked what they did with Punk and Jericho to some extent. I think they've done a decent job of selling those two feuds. And Cena and Lesnar, whether I like the build or not, it's still, a lot of star power at the top of the card. But, I kind of felt like the build ended there. I mean, tonight just was really mediocre to me. I was not enthused about the show. I talked a little bit via Google Chat during the broadcast, and it just felt like the show took forever to complete. Like, it was just, I had a very kind of busy work day. I take my daughter to and from daycare. I put in 8 hours worth of work, and, I think the show felt at least as long as my work day today. It was just very kind of laborious to watch, and I don't know if you feel the same way I did, but, I think they accomplished more in video packages tonight than they did with the actual live show, or the tape show, I should say.
Yeah, we've talked many times in the past that you can tell how good the show is by how fast it goes by. You look up sometimes and you're like, holy crap, it's 7:45, this show's almost over. I feel like I just got started. And other times, tragically like tonight, you look up and go, oh my God. And I think I even said this to you in Google Chat, I cannot believe there's another hour left in this show after the Randy Orton interview segment. It was just, this has been the longest hour. And I thought it started out pretty good. I thought Daniel Bryan's opening segment was very well done. It got a little busy at the end, but it hooked me right off the bat. I thought it was a good sell for Extreme Rules, and I thought the close was a good sell for Extreme Rules. I don't feel like they added anything. A lot, that match gained a little bit something with this show, but the pay-per-view itself, you're right, had more selling done by the video packages that they did than anything else they did off the show. I thought Brian and Sheamus got some heat that it needed through what they did tonight. But outside of that, it was not a very effective go-home show. And it does seem that part of that reason is because the WWE is shifting the focus. Raw has always been the A show. No question about that. SmackDown's always been the B show. But it seems all of a sudden that this Raw Super Show feature, this way they're doing things now, where they've gotten rid of the brand extension, a lot of that seems to be because they seem to be filling a lot of time with young stars. We had Ryback wrestle tonight. We had Darren Young and Titus O'Neil wrestle tonight. We had the in-ring debut of Antonio Cesaro. We're going to get, I assume, the in-ring debut, based on what he said, of Damian Sandow next week. And so we're seeing a lot of young stars really beginning to fill the time on SmackDown with maybe the one big storyline or two big storylines built around them, and they're putting a lot of the emphasis on storytelling itself, as far as for pay-per-views, onto just Monday Night Raw. Are you seeing that trend as well? And if you do, what do you think of it? Are you excited about the idea of SmackDown potentially becoming the WWE ECW version that we had before it shut down, where ECW was the place where young stars cut their teeth? A lot of people liked that show at the end. And so do you think SmackDown's headed that way, or are you excited about it?
Yeah, I mean, it sure seems that way. I mean, we're seeing a lot of fresh faces on SmackDown, and I don't think it's a bad thing, to be honest. They'll probably have some challenges to overcome as far as finding the right mix of veterans and the incoming talent from FCW. But I'm optimistic. I think Antonio Cesaro is going to be great. I've been a fan of his work for quite some time in his indie days and working overseas and whatnot. And Sandow continues to be very interesting on the microphone. O'Neill and Darren Young. I mean, that whole segment was a bomb tonight. But I still think they have they're athletic, and if they can find a workable character, they can. They can be a force in the tag division. So, it's not all bad. Tonight just didn't feel like it ever got out of second gear for me. It was just kind of stalled. Felt like it, running uphill for most of tonight. But the youth movement, I'm optimistic about.
Yeah, and, the thing that surprised me the most, it felt a lot like, wrestling on Saturday nights, back when I was a kid growing up. It was actually WCW is what it was. That was the name of the show, even though it was Jim Crockett Promotions and NWA, until Ted Turner, of course, went and bought it out, and everybody knows the history there. But it reminded me a lot of that show in that we had a lot of talking and a lot of two-minute matches. And, of course, the difference between this show and that show is that show had jobbers. I mean, guys who were enhancement talent, they were never going to win. When I did .NET Weekly with Real Pruitt a couple of weeks ago, I even mentioned the Mulkey Brothers. I was a big fan of the Mulkey Brothers. Remember when they won their first match and got to go into the Crockett Cup and all that kind of silliness that went on? It was so much fun. Here they've got guys who are stars that are actually the ones out there taking these losses, these two-minute losses, when they have finishes. We had, at least one match tonight that didn't even have a finish. It was around 2 minutes. Do you like this new kind of format? Well, we had the one 11-minute match, the main event, and everything else was just kind of two-minute squashes or the non-finish, as it were. Do you like this format, or would you like it more if they, went and got some enhancement talent, some guys? So you don't have guys like Cody Rhodes, Tyson Kidd, Ezekiel Jackson and Yoshitatsu, you can make the argument that some of those guys, that's what they are. They are the Mulkey Brothers. They're the enhancement talent. But all those guys have been pushed at some point, some very recently, in fact. Some are still getting pushed, and that raises a lot of questions. We'll talk about that when we get there. But do you think it would be better if this is what they're going to do, if they're going to have the young guys come in, do these squash matches to build them up, start making them stars? Do you think it's time for WWE to look into, if nothing else, turning these guys that they're using into just straight enhancement talent and let them be those Mulkey Brothers of the modern era, or go out and get some guys to fill those roles? Or are you okay with them using people who just were very recently or not so long ago being stars?
Well, I don't think they're going to change formulas back to anything you know, that we might resemble jobbers. I just don't see them making a comeback. I mean, once in a while we see it on the show, you know, with somebody, you know, local that shows up and gets killed. But, I mean, for the most part, I think, you know, we're going to see modifications to what we normally see on TV. But, I mean, the success of the show is so, you know, it basically relies on star power to some extent. So I don't think they're going to be able to run out the locals to get squashed, because I think their roster is large enough where it would be difficult to justify, you know, bringing in local guys and leaving somebody you're paying on the regular off of TV. So I would assume we'll probably end up seeing a mix of people getting pushed up and down. I think if they put a little bit more creative effort into the mid card and the lower end of the card, and actually gave these guys meaningful stories, perhaps they could actually, get some more meaningful TV out of it. But it seems like a lot of this stuff is an afterthought, and I don't think we're going to see a much improved TV product until, because during the Attitude Era, that was one of the major success stories, you know, from my perspective, is that there was interesting things happening all up and down the card, and I think they need to find a way to get back to something resembling that.
Yeah, that's fair. I look at Ryback. Ryback's doing the killing the local jobber gimmick right now, and it just, it seems if you're going to have those guys go, I just think about, like Tyson Kidd had to go out in a minute and a half tonight, and Zeke and Yoshitatsu had to go out in a minute and a half tonight, and that would have been places for those local guys to do something, or, to hire some guys specifically for that. You can pad your roster a little bit then with, without spending a whole lot of money, bringing these guys on for relatively cheap, and, not have to, in essence, bury some of these guys. But, hey, it's still a living for them, so we'll see how it goes over the next few weeks. I'm certainly interested. It looks like we're going to get this format for a while these guys, make their appearances, cut their teeth. You got Damian Sandow again coming in next week, and, I assume he'll be wrestling, and somebody will have to do that for him. And these guys need to be built up, and I'm glad that they have a role for everyone at this point. I'm not real happy where Antonio Cesaro is and his storyline, but you got to put him somewhere, and if they're going to do the story, I guess he's at least in something, somewhat of a major role, or at least a major storyline, at least on the SmackDown, even if we're not fans of it. Let's go through this from start to finish. Again, it was taped on April the 24th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Pretty good crowd tonight. It did seem to be dubbed in different ways. Again, we saw some yes chants at the beginning, especially that didn't seem as loud as they should have been from watching the crowd. I don't know why WWE continues to do that. I'm to the point now where I don't think they're necessarily blocking out the yes chants. I just think they just dub in crowd noise for SmackDown for some reason, and it gets kind of weird looking because you see one thing and you hear something else. But maybe I'm wrong about that. It just certainly feels that way watching SmackDown each week now. We get our standard opening video, Pyro, Michael Cole, and Booker T alone, just the two of them checking on commentary. My nightmare scenario from Monday has come true. Josh Matthews is still apparently dead from Brock Lesnar killing him. They did show the video at the top of the show of Lesnar throwing him in to whatever pile of mess it was on Monday. They said that Matthews was suffering from a stiff and sore neck and abrasions on his back and from what happened. And so he was not going to be there tonight, and he was missed because it's pretty much Cole and Booker T bickering the entire show. Daniel Bryan makes his ring entrance and comes to the ring to cut a promo. He says he finally did it. He cut the umbilical cord and got rid of AJ. But he said there was something that was still bothering him. He needed to set the record straight. He said the loss to Sheamus at WrestleMania, that 18-second loss, does not count. And really, it should go on AJ's record because AJ's the one who lost that match, not him. He said Sheamus is running around with his World Heavyweight Championship like he actually won something, but he's going to fix all that on Sunday because Sheamus couldn't beat him legitimately once, let alone two out of three times. Bryan said his feeling for Sheamus aside, even though he didn't, whatever his feelings for the Great White were on Monday when John Laurinaitis came to him and asked him to referee the match between Sheamus and Henry on Raw, he wanted to call it straight down the middle. He felt like he did that. He said some people had accused him of doing a fast count, but he wanted to show evidence that that was not true. He played the video that showed them squaring off, followed by Mark Henry's clothesline and Henry's cover. All of that was in regular speed, but as soon as he went down to count, they slowed it down. There was enough slow motion added in that it seemed like a pretty good rhythm of a three count instead of the fast count that we actually got on Monday. They cut back to a ring. Daniel Bryan smiling, cheesing it up big time. He said that I lost my place here. He said that that Sheamus couldn't control himself after that loss, and he got mad because he got beat, and that Bryan ended up having to defend himself. And he asked for footage to be played of that. They picked it up where Sheamus threw Bryan back in the ring and then hit the bro kick on Henry, just to have Bryan clip his leg, hit him with the kick, and then lock on the yes lock. They stayed with it for a second, and when we got a camera angle from the ground right in Sheamus' face as Bryan wrenched back on the yes lock, you hear Bryan said, stop it right there, and let that picture hold for just a second. And again, we had Bryan cheesing it up in the ring. He said now it was time for the Q&A part of his time. He said he asked if Henry beat Sheamus on Raw and answered yes. He said he asked if he made Sheamus tap out on Money Made the Hole in front of the whole world, and again he answered yes. And then he asked if that meant he was going to win his title back at Extreme Rules, and answered yes by starting the yes chant. He said it five or six times, and Alberto Del Rio's music hit. Alberto Del Rio was introduced by Ricardo Rodriguez, and as they're coming to the ring, Del Rio begins to cut a promo, and he asked a question. He asked, if Bryan was making excuses because he got beat in 18 seconds, he reaches the mic over to Ricardo Rodriguez, and Rick Rod says, see, instead of yes. He asked if whoever wins the pay-per-view is going to eventually lose to the number one contender, and Rodriguez again said, see. They climbed in the ring at that point, and he said, is the winner of the pay-per-view eventually going to lose, or is the new world heavyweight champion going to be Alberto Del Rio? And he said, see again. He goes, and then he asked, is Daniel Bryan going to be forgotten as soon as he loses that title? And that's when Rodriguez started jumping up and down saying, see. And Del Rio picked it up as well, got right in Bryan's face with saying, see, over and over. And then Big Show's music hit. Big Show comes to the ring, and starts his promo. He says he's confused. He just wants to know which one it is. Is it yes, or is it C? Is it yes, or is it C? He goes after Bryan. All of a sudden, Bryan dives out of the ring. He goes, Del Rio dives out of the ring. He catches Ricardo Rodriguez, drags him over. Of course, Ricardo's all worked up, reaching out, crying for Del Rio. He smooths his suit down and says, calm down. He goes, I just want to know which is it. Is it yes or C? He puts the microphone in front of Ricardo's face. Ricardo's response was, Big Show took the mic back and went, C. And then choke slammed him, and we went into commercial. I liked the opening. I thought Bryan was very good in what he did. It got busy at the end. It didn't get bad. I didn't think Del Rio and Show were bad. Del Rio fumbled his lines a little bit. But was overall effective. Show did what he was supposed to do. It wasn't terrible, but it kind of took some of the heat off of it and just left it kind of really busy. And really, I think more than anything, what problem I do have with it is it just took heat off of what Bryan had just done. I don't know if that's a smart thing to do when that's one of your main events heading into this Sunday. What do you think of it?
Well, I mean, overall, I thought Bryan was really good here. You know, I thought the segment worked. And, a couple reasons that I think Bryan has worked so well is, you know, just aside from being just a general, you know, kind of asshole to Sheamus, he's managed to, you know, irrespective of whatever feud he's in, he's managed to make himself completely unlikable as a human being. And I think that's, you know, it's worked for him. You know, he's managed to do both things. You know, he's in the context of the feud, he's irritating. But, you know, just as a character on his own, he's one of the most unlikable people on either brand, and I think that's a credit to him. But, you know, the other reason this segment worked was because of Ricardo. I mean, if he's not as over the top as he is, that probably wasn't a very good promo from Del Rio. And, yeah. You know, Big Show's antics with him, were good too. You know, he did a pretty over the top, sell on the chokeslam too. So Bryan and Rick Rod made that segment work, and I thought it was a good opener. It definitely covered a lot of ground and moved the show forward in a pretty good way.
Yeah, do you think it took heat off of Bryan's promo? I mean, do you think it took anything away, or is that just me?
I guess I didn't think so. I mean, I thought the we'll talk about it more when we get there. But I thought the main event took up more heat off of Bryan than this did. I thought he looked pretty good here.
Cool. All right, well, we'll talk about that in the main event then. When we came back from commercial, we joined the first match already in progress. So it ended up being Big Show defeating Alberto Del Rio by disqualification in about a minute and 50 seconds of television time. I have no idea how long it was going on before the match. You couldn't get a, or before the commercial break. Couldn't get a good feel of it because everything happened so fast. We come back. You got Big Show doing his bit, chopping Del Rio around, slapping him around a little bit. Michael Cole announces at that point that the Big Show and Cody Rhodes stipulation will be decided by spin the wheel, face the deal sort of thing at Extreme Rules. Do you like that idea, Jake, about them using the spin the wheel gimmick to figure out what type of match it's going to be?
Hey, I guess it's as good as any other gimmick. I mean, I hope whenever they do these wheel spin things, it always looks so preposterously set up. Like, you can tell exactly what it is before they spin, but I hope they pull it off this time. You know, generally in the past it's been kind of obvious, but I hope they can get around it.
Yeah, the last time they did it, I thought they did a pretty good job. I remember the time before, you know, the person spins it and sitting there spinning, and then it would go from, you know, I don't know, three clicks, you know, from five clicks a second to suddenly one click a second. Like, it just, there was no, the laws of physics completely changed in that back room for WWE. It was so bad. So I'm hoping, as long as, however they've got it gimmicked, I hope it works so that it doesn't, it's not one of those cheesy sort of things again. But before they could really get going, out of nowhere, you get Cody Rhodes sliding in the ring and clipping Big Show from behind, causing disqualification. Del Rio hightails it out of the ring. Cody rolls to the floor, pulls out a kendo stick and a chair, tosses both in the ring, slides back in, grabs the kendo stick, and hits Big Show in the head or shoulder or something with it, and Show completely no-sells it. Just, you know, gets pissed off about it. Cody grabs the chair, takes a swing at Show with it. Show punches it out of the air. So Cody rips his belt off and goes after Show. Show kicks him, grabs Cody's belt, rips Cody's shirt off, hits Cody in the back with it one time. Cody scampers to the floor and back up the ramp, leaving Big Show in the ring standing tall. This was the first of two moments tonight where they once again chat on Cody Rhodes. I don't understand it. I don't know of any heat on him. Jason hasn't been able to tell me of any heat on him. What in the blue hell did Cody Rhodes do to go from looking so great to every single time we see him now since WrestleMania, he's been made to look like a total putz?
I don't know. I can't explain that one. I wish I could tell you, because it would it'd be a lot more interesting, hopefully, than what we're seeing from him right now. I mean, they're doing the you know, kind of losing streak, lost this mojo thing with him too. You know, which generally in the past has led to, you know, character changes. So I don't know exactly where they plan to go with him, but it's definitely, you know, not winning them any favors with the fans. It's going to be hard to take them seriously if they, you know, if they continue to beat them down the way they have.
Do you think he wins the title back this Sunday?
I hope so. I mean, I hope that was the point of all this, is that, you know, he's going to get some measure of revenge at the pay-per-view and hopefully look strong coming out of it, even if it's a BS finish at this point. It would be better than you know, what we've been seeing. I mean, it's kind of a shame, because he did have a lot of momentum heading into WrestleMania. He looked strong just about every week, and now it's just been a free fall. So I hope they get him back on track. You know, the match really wasn't much to talk about. It's a couple-minute match, and then it was over. So, I mean, it didn't look like it was building anywhere, but the Rhodes thing is just really kind of depressing. You know, if you're a fan of him, hopefully they get him back on track at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I my guess is they're going to use the gimmick to get, you know, that's how they're going to protect Show, is to use the gimmick to get it back over, and then they'll have some sort of blow-off that they can, you know, give Cody a cheap win in some way. I'm hoping that to blow the feud off and Cody can go back to bringing prestige to the Intercontinental Championship, where Big Show just, you know, it's a prop for him. It doesn't do anything for him. He doesn't do anything for the title. We cut backstage where Johnny Ace and Eve were walking around, Laurinaitis. They were talking about, you know, Eve is now his executive administrator, and she's going to be handling things for him. Eve suggested that everybody get name tags. okay. Laurinaitis looks up, sees Teddy Long, calls him over. Teddy says, if she's your executive administrator, what am I now? And Laurinaitis says, you're just an employee. That's what you've always been. In fact, now you have to answer to Eve. And he says, got kind of offended. I have to answer to Eve. And he said, yes, absolutely. And Eve said, you need to go get a name tag. And so Teddy stormed off to go get his name tag. I guess, 2 seconds on this. I'm so done with this storyline. And especially when we find out later that, Antonio Cesaro was playing into this storyline. This is the stupidest thing on television. I swear to God, I'd rather see Hornswoggle for 5 segments than to watch any more of this crap with Teddy Long.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I messaged you during the show and said Teddy is the new JR. Apparently it's just open season on ridicule for Teddy, and it's hard to explain. I can't imagine the payoff being any good. You don't care now. It's like the outcome is almost trivial. You just want it to go away. So I don't know. I hope this doesn't ruin the momentum that whatever Cesaro might pick up. Because Teddy's obviously going to find somebody to go after him. It's just a matter of who. So I don't know. We'll see how this unfolds, but I'm definitely not enthused by it in any way.
It's the most frustrating thing. I'll move on because we see it again in just a few minutes, and I might want to save a little hate for that moment. We get a replay of the video that shows Nikki Bella winning the Divas title on Raw, and of course now we know that Beth Phoenix's ankle injury is a work. They will be facing off against each other again on Sunday in Extreme Rules for that Divas Championship. I got to tell you, Jake, though, I watched that video play out. I watched it play out knowing that Beth faked that injury, that it was 100% work, and it still looked nasty. She did a fantastic job on Monday putting that injury over.
Yeah, she really did. I wasn't sure of what the situation was until the next day, when the news kind of broke about the whole thing. But it was really well done. I thought for sure, based on the way they kind of all piled up, and it seemed like they improvised something, that it was an injury. But they pulled one over on us. Congratulations to them for that.
Yeah, I completely bought it. I was, obviously I didn't know for sure, but it sure did seem like it had all the fixings of it being a legit injury, and I was very, very impressed. So, good for her on that. After commercial, we get Damian Sandow. He cuts his promo of the week on Enlightenment. He talked a lot about the Enlightenment era, and mentioned names that were in it and whatnot. But of course, the big news of this promo was that we are only 1 week away from getting Enlightenment ourselves here in WWE. Damian Sandow should be debuting next week on SmackDown. I think we're both as equally excited for him as we were for Cesaro tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really, the pre-tapes have been excellent. I guess we'll have to see how he is with the live mic in his hand and what he's doing in the ring. But, the character has impressed me. The vocabulary has at least been faux intellectual, if not intellectual. So definitely will be an interesting character to see him mix up with some of the other more brash types. It has worked in the past with similar characters. So I'm interested to see where they go with it. If he's good in the ring, I think it could be really fun.
Yeah, he's going to draw a big heat. My only problem with his character is a lot like I get irritated at the foreign heel. He's a heel simply because he's foreign. This guy's going to be the heel simply because he's smart. It's kind of frustrating, I know, for you, you're a guy who likes reads a lot of philosophy and that sort of thing. We've talked about that before, and I'm a guy that does that too. I don't know, I guess it frustrates me because it plays into those stereotypes that all wrestling fans are just, buck-tooth hicks and who sit around believing it's all real. That's a little bit frustrating, but, I am looking forward to the character because I think he can have, like you said, if he's good in the ring, he can have pretty good, probably have a pretty good run in WWE with this character. We cut to the ring, Alicia Fox is already there, the Bellas make their entrance, second match of the night, Nikki Bella, or actually, it's Brie Bella, but Nikki was the official Bella, gets the win at 1:52 over Alicia Fox to retain the WWE Championship, Divas Championship. This one was really bizarre. They did twin magic even though Nikki wasn't in trouble. Nikki hit a reverse DDT. The ref checked on Alicia. She rolls to the floor. Brie jumps in, hits the finishing move for the win. Why do twin magic if there's no reason to do twin magic, Jake?
For old time's sake, I have no idea why. I mean, we know the Bellas are, running up close to the end of their contract and they're not expected to renew, so I don't know. It didn't feel like it was it's kind of a throwaway affair entirely anyway, so I don't know. I guess I wasn't mad about it, but standard women's match, twin magic finish. I mean, we've seen this, 1,000 times before, so not much to remark about here.
We get Michael Cole hyping his interview with Randy Orton for later in the show. And after commercial, we get what was certainly the most frustrating part. So, I got a tweet from a guy who told me that if you say something's terrible, then you're not a real fan. And I really wonder if this guy watched this next whole segment from commercial to commercial. I guess it's technically two segments. But from commercial to commercial, this chunk of the show right here, if he's really going to say that to me with a straight face, because this was god-awful. You have Yoshitatsu doing squats in the back, getting ready for a match, obviously. Darren Young and Titus O'Neil walk up. They start making fun of him. It's very racial, doing the whole, hey, and that sort of thing. Again, it was all racial humor and making fun of his ethnicity and whatnot. Ezekiel Jackson walks up and starts taking up for him. Obviously, they're in a tag team match against those two. I will give Titus and Darren this. They didn't act all scared when Zeke showed up. They kept the same brashness that they had before, which was good. We often see heels get emaciated when the power guy shows up all of a sudden, but they didn't hear. In fact, they walked off chanting, Zeke ain't got no cuts, and in fact, there was a whole cheer. He's big, he's strong, but Zeke ain't got no cuts. You know what? I'll just turn it over to you. I don't really know what to say.
The World War II Japanese stereotype act didn't really do anything for me. That was, I don't know, it just came off as horribly racist to me. And I guess I don't have any right to be offended on behalf of Japanese people, but it offended me just watching it because it was just so stupid. Even if you don't think it's racist, it was just stupid. And then, the dance they did when Zeke walked up, it was just like, is this supposed to be entertaining? Am I supposed to think they're stupid? Am I supposed to be laughing? I mean, it just was not, I don't know, it didn't seem to really, and the whole thing didn't matter. It was just offensive. I don't know, the lowbrow humor. I mean, that would have gotten booed off a vaudeville stage. That was bad.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I mean, if you got it, good. Like I said, I don't even know what to say. It was just so fundamentally bad. I was watching it across the street at the clubhouse here in the apartment complex I live in, and there was a guy who would come in to use the internet over there, and he looked up when all that was going on and kind of looked at me and then went back to his computer. I'm like, yeah, please don't judge me based on that. And then, as if he was judging me on that, they give me something really fantastic to follow that up with. You get Teddy Long in a maid uniform with a great big, hello, my name is Teddy, on the chest. He's in Laurinaitis' office with a feather duster. Oksana walks up at that point, and Teddy starts fumbling all over himself. I appreciate, it's been so hard these past few weeks, but my grandkids, college fund is safe, and I know with you standing by me, I've been able to do it. And she said, I am impressed that you've been able to take this for so long, to stand up like this. But I didn't realize when you were GM that you were old enough to have grandkids. Teddy starts coughing and sputtering over himself again, and here comes Ace and Eve. And Laurinaitis tells Oksana that favor she asked about, he's going to do tonight. He's going to give Cesaro, her friend Antonio Cesaro, a trial match, a test match, and if he likes what he sees, he's going to hire him. He goes, what do you think about that, Teddy? He said, and Oksana, you're going to be the guest ring announcer for that match. And so she jumps up and down, thank you, Laurinaitis, and she runs out of the room. And then Eve says, oh, go ahead and tell him. And Teddy says, tell me what? And so they tell him that Eve's new idea is for the Teddy table. With Josh Matthews not being there to serve on commentary, they need another voice on commentary. So they're going to give Teddy his own table out there to talk on through the matches. And he's got nothing to worry about if he's nervous, because Teddy will have a headset on. And Laurinaitis will have one in the back as well with a microphone, and Teddy is not to say anything unless Laurinaitis tells him to. He said, do you understand? And he said, yes, I understand. And he said, Teddy, you look kind of ridiculous in this get-up. No shit, Laurinaitis. He goes, so why don't you put this on instead, and hands him a People Power shirt, and said, now go get ready. And we went to commercial, and I honestly pulled up my resignation letter to Jason at that point. Really, this is how you're going to bring in a guy like Claudio Castagnoli, who had a great career in the Indies, who was one of the last guys signed and one of the first guys up in this last wave of signing. And this is how you're going to bring him in. This is the storyline with Teddy Long running around in a friggin' maid uniform. This shit is ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, you're almost expecting the birth of another hand at some point in this fiasco. I mean, it's really terrible. I mean, it's not even funny. I mean, I guess they're supposed to be tormenting Teddy, but I mean, it's not even clever. There's nothing funny about it. I mean, it's just awful. I guess if you're trying to make Laurinaitis look bad here, I mean, wouldn't it be better if he did actually something evil or clever? I mean, this is just stupid. I don't know. I mean, it does nothing for me. And, the whole thing with, Cesaro being brought up as a part of this angle, I hope this is just a minor roadblock onto something bigger. In fact, this will drag him down if they stick with it too long.
Yeah, and the problem here is, yes, it's stupid, and I'm willing to forgive stupid if the payoff was going to be worth something. But as I've said many, many times, Teddy Long is not sympathetic enough to get people rallying behind him so that when he picks his person who's finally going to get his total revenge, whenever that plays out, you don't care. You're not going to care that Teddy Long got everything back because you don't give a damn about Teddy Long. And, I just don't understand why they think this is good television. I don't know how you would look at that. And when it's over, go, hell yeah, that was good television. I mean, that really kind of bugs me on a personal level, that someone can create something and look at that and think that was good. And if you enjoyed it, I'm not really questioning you. I just don't get it. I don't see how any of it, even the segment before with Titus and O'Neil and Darren Young and their stupid little dance. If you take it in a bubble, them dancing around and chin like they were was kind of, stupid enough to kind of get you giggling about it. None of this was. This, even in a bubble, this doesn't work. In the grander story arc, it doesn't work. Okay, I'm done. I'm not going to go any more about Teddy Long. But we still have more of Teddy Long later to come. We go to commercial. When we come back, we get our third match of the night, Darren Young and Titus O'Neil defeating Yoshitatsu and Ezekiel Jackson in a minute and 45 seconds. The sub 2-minute matches continue. I didn't see it. Maybe I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Zeke never got in this match, did he? It was talked to the whole time, wasn't it?
Yeah, there were some quick tags, and then Darren Young hit a drop kick or something on Zeke off the apron, and then they hit their finisher on Tatsu, and it was over. So yeah, there was never a tag. I mean, all that happened to him the entire match is he got booted off the apron.
Yeah, it was just, because it happened so fast, I thought, oh, crap, I must have missed it. Maybe he started the match. No, I'm pretty sure Yoshi started the match. How did I miss him in the middle? So, yeah, it like you said, I missed the dropkick to the floor somehow, I guess because I blinked. But, good win for Young and O'Neil. I mean, they could get another win from opponents who have had some quality in recent history, and or at least Zeke has probably more recently than Tatsu has. So, they continue to win, and they're going to be a formidable tag team if they ever get serious about the tag division. And so it's a good win in that sense, but, the goodwill I think they gained here was kind of already, they were in a hole from the silly segment backstage.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay action. I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was just a 1.5-minute match. I mean, there's not a whole lot that happened here except a few power moves in the finisher. So, you know, not a whole lot to comment on. It was just over and done with.
Yeah, and that was the kind of the theme of the night. It's like, you know, these are squash matches. What do you say? You know, it's a minute-and-a-half match. We can't talk about a minute-and-a-half match for 10 minutes. It's kind of impossible, but... So we got hyped for Randy Orton for next. We come back from commercial, and Michael Cole's in the ring. He introduces Randy Orton, who still gets a great pop, even if he's arguably the most boring thing on SmackDown right now. Cole antagonized Orton out of the box and, you know, just kind of took some shots at him and then said, by the way, Laurinaitis has instituted a rule based on what happened with Josh Matthews on Monday night. If any superstar touches an announcer, they would be immediately suspended. Orton came back with, you know, he goes, is that a question, Cole? He said, you know, it's not probably a good idea to push me because I don't always tend to act rationally when I'm pushed. I'm a shoot first, ask questions last kind of guy. Cole swallowed kind of hard at that point, and we're here to talk about you and Kane. Let's look at the history you and Kane have had. They played a very good video. I thought this was the most exciting thing we've seen out of this feud is this video package that they put together that kind of recounted everything from last July when they had the match that Kane shook his hand after that led to everything that was going on, all the way up to the most recent interaction the two had. After the video was over, Cole looks at Orton and says, Kane said at WrestleMania he became that monster he was always supposed to be after defeating you there. And he said, how does it feel to be facing a monster at Extreme Rules, a monster who was reborn because of your failures at WrestleMania, Randy Orton? Orton's response was, and I quote, no pun intended there, and I quote, wow, Cole, that was deep. So Orton starts this, he doesn't really answer the question. He starts kind of cutting this rambling-ass promo about, you know, Kane's not the only monster, and, you know, it's false count anywhere, but that's just the beginning of it. He's going to unleash violence on Kane and this, that, and the other. And, you know, Kane says he's the devil's favorite demon, but the devil himself will not be able to unleash the hell that he's going to unleash on Sunday. I was really going to sleep. I was struggling in the middle of this promo. I thought, good God. And then the most confusing moment of the night happens. Jinder Mahal's music hits and cuts Orton off. And it's probably the only time Jinder Mahal has been cheered for, but I stood up and clapped where I was watching because I wanted Orton to shut up. Mahal comes to the ring speaking in Punjabi. I know we have listeners out there that speak Punjabi. If you want to email one of us and let us know what was said there, css3238@gmail.com, and it's Jake Barnett at Gmail, correct?
Barnett.Jake@gmail.
So, if you know, let us know what he was saying there in Punjabi, if you would, because there's a lot of it. He got in the ring and cut a half Punjabi, half English promo. Said that the way he saw it, that Kane and Orton were going to take each other out at Extreme Rules, and when they did, a new generation of a new breed of superstar would rise up. He said he'd be waiting for Orton on the other side and turned to leave. He got to the ropes, and Orton said, wait, are you an announcer? And Mahal turns around and goes, what? He goes, are you an announcer? Do you commentate for a living? And he says, no, I'm the fastest rising super, and Orton cuts him off, and he goes, okay, that's fine. Because apparently announcers are off limits. He drops the microphone, hits the RKO on Jinder Mahal. We had a USA chant going on, and he celebrates over the down body of Mahal. I was really flat when this was over. I thought it was a terrible promo on Orton's part. I didn't understand the reason to sacrifice Mahal. Orton doesn't need the heat. I'm glad he cut his rambling-ass promo off. But other than that, I didn't get the purpose of all this. This was kind of indicative of a lot of the show tonight. It's just kind of flat.
I really have no idea why I'm supposed to cheer Randy Orton. No idea.
Yeah.
He's a completely unlikable person. There's no... He's irrationally violent. He threatens people regularly for no reason. I mean, this is like... Why would anybody like this guy? I mean, if you hung around with Randy Orton's character on television, you know, it wouldn't take more than a few hours before you'd ever wanted to see him again. I mean, he's just an asshole. and people cheer like crazy. It's just unbelievable. I have no idea why I'm supposed to like him. He has almost no redeeming qualities at all.
Yeah, it's a good point. And you know, a lot of what you said could also be said for Stone Cold Steve Austin, but it's not working in the same way. You don't feel the desire to cheer for Randy Orton. You don't, he's not connected. Yes, he gets great pops, but he gets great pops because he's Randy Orton. Not because he's the character, it's because he's been there for 10 years, he's supposed to be cheered, he's the star, he has nothing compelling about him right now, he's the most boring character. And look, and I say that, and I think you agree with me, a year ago this time, he was the best thing on this show, was he not?
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely was having the best, run his career in the ring. I mean, but, you know, at that point, he... You know, he wasn't, playing up the whole I'm a deranged psychopath kind of thing. He was really cutting more cookie-cutter, even John Cena-like promos back then. But now he's kind of back to that kind of middle ground where he kind of floats around, you know. He does genuinely heel things sometimes. And then, you know, others, he's trying to play up... doing the baby face act where, my name is crap like that. So I don't know. It's hard to really place him anywhere on a character map because he's just utterly random. I don't know.
Yep, I don't get it either. So, hopefully this match is blown off. But whatever happens with him and Kane, I hope it's a total blow off of this feud and they find something to do with Randy Orton again because he's probably... As far as a percentage of where he should be, I guess, for one of their tournament, there's a lot of guys who are not pushed to the level they should be, but as far as total, loss of where they should be, I think he's the guy who's suffering the most right now. He seems adrift. They've got him in this feud with Kane. It's something to do, but it's not something good to do. So I hope they're able to find that spark that they had from him about, 10, 12 months ago. I think he was doing great stuff. After commercial, we come back. Eddie Long, by the way, was on commentary for the tag match, with O'Neill and Young, and Cole would ask him questions, and he would just sit there. Kenny would just sit there, and then finally you hear him say what, and then he would say something very deadpan. Cole was berating him. Why didn't you sign these guys? Why didn't you sign these guys? How could you screw that up? You gonna answer my question? And he'd go, what? I made a mistake, Cole. So you could tell he was supposedly getting line spit from the back. And that's the thing too is that they're using this kind of smart fan angle with this whole thing about feeding lines on the headset and about how frustrating that is. And Mick Foley, of course, raged about that, and it was the reason why he left SmackDown because of the way Vince talked to him in the headset. And so they're kind of playing into that knowledge. But they're doing it with a character that the smart fans friggin' hate. It's the stupid, I hate to get wound up about this, but it every week it's like they just continue to do this with this guy. I kind of know how John Cena haters feel to some degree now. But Teddy was back at the announce table again. Oksana was in the ring. Her music was playing. She introduced Tyson Kidd, who, didn't get an entrance and didn't even have his music playing. oftentimes you get the guy in the ring, you hear the tail end of his music. No. We had Oksana's music playing. And then it's time for the debut of Antonio Cesaro, formerly Ring of Honor's Claudio Castagnoli, a guy that, when I first saw him, I immediately asked you because you knew more about the Ring of Honor project than I did at that point and was like, hey, why isn't this guy in WWE? And, you told me there was a time at one point that something had gotten screwed up and, it was just when I saw him, that was my immediate reaction. I'm happy to see him in the big time. But holy cow, Jay, could they have picked worse music for this guy? It sounded like something AJ would come out to.
Yeah, it was about as non-threatening pop music as you could possibly get. And I don't know if they're kind of – they really didn't define much about him as a character thus far. I mean, he's – he doesn't seem necessarily evil or good in any way yet. So, and the music was just as nondescript. I mean, you could have sent a jobber out there to this, and nobody would have thought twice about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like the thing you pay a dollar for if you've got a sound mixing software. There's a lot of times you can get, like, Creative Commons stuff or pay a buck for cheesy music, and this is what it sounds like, something they paid a dollar for. Not to insult the person who made it, but that's what it sounded like. He comes to the ring, and it's his first match, and it was our fourth match of the night. Antonio Cesaro defeating Tyson Kidd in a minute 25 seconds. Didn't see any of the Claudio Castagnoli signature spots here, other than he did do a pop-up European uppercut that Grand Rapids loved. I mean, they gasped it big time. I'm making an assumption it wasn't piped in, but they really liked that. And his finisher was he lifted Kidd like he was going to do a pile driver. In fact, when he picked him up, I thought it was going to be a power bomb, and then he held him like it was going to be a pile driver, and I thought, oh Lord, you're going to let him do a pile driver? But then he brought his right arm down in between Kidd's legs, and then came all the way forward, almost like a Styles Clash type finisher there, and that was the finish. Before we get into the post match antics, I mean, it was a minute 25 second match. You didn't see much of him. He hit, you know, four or five moves. Half of them strikes and whatnot. But what did you think of his finisher, I guess, first of all? And did you like what you saw in the ring tonight?
Yeah, I thought he looked good. You know, the whole, I mean, the Kid's a nice guy to go out there and have a match with. I mean, he's great in the ring, and he sells well. So, yeah. You know, if you're going to send him out there with anybody to make him look good, I mean, Kid is a good example. And he did well here, too, you know, selling all the offense. I mean, that press into the European uppercut was unique. It definitely got the crowd's attention, and I thought it worked well. I didn't even know what to call that move at the end. I messaged you, like, did they say a name for that I missed? Because it was unique. It almost looked like he was going for, like, Jerry Lynn's cradle pile driver, and then he just kind of dropped him forward like a pedigree or style clash or something. But it looked good, and, you know, I thought the match as a whole, you know, looked good. So that's a good start.
I mean, the guy can work. There's no question about that. We've seen him in Ring of Honor for quite some time, and he did great stuff there and other various independents, PWG and whatnot. So, I'm looking forward to what he's going to do. He looked great here. Then we get the post-match stuff. You have Teddy Long on the headset, of course, and you hear him say, I don't want to do that, Mr. Laurinaitis. And then it's quiet for a second. He says, yes, sir. He gets in the ring. Oksana, of course, announces Antonio as the winner. She jumps in the ring and hugged him. Teddy gets in the ring, walks over, holds up Antonio's hand. Cesaro really played it up to the crowd with Teddy doing that. And then he grabbed Oksana. And, I guess I really couldn't tell. I mean, she didn't fight it, obviously, but he kissed her. It didn't look like she came on to him. He came on to her. Not saying she was fighting against it, but I guess it really doesn't matter. But just for the sake of analyzing it, is that what you got to, that he kissed her more so than she kissed him?
Yeah, that's kind of what I gathered. I mean, he definitely went in for the kiss, but it didn't look like it was untoward or anything. It was definitely, consensual. So, yeah, it wasn't he leaned in and stole one or anything.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't. She wasn't upset about it.
Exactly.
I guess who made the first move? It certainly looked like he was the guy that made the first move, if it matters. At which point, I mean, and it was a long, tawdry kiss, and Teddy Long tried to play like he was crying or whatever, and Cole's cackling in the background, oh, she was out of your league, you got grandkids. Teddy looked at him and then walked to the ropes and looked back longingly one time and then climbed out of the ring and walked to the back. And yet I still didn't give a shit about the guy, even though I just saw his heart get broken. That was it. That was their big play. I mean, honestly, I think if you're going to get sympathy for Teddy, that was going to be it, and I got nothing. Did it move you?
No, they've wrung every last drop of sympathy out of Teddy Long. I mean, he's been duped how many times by these younger women? It's just, another episode in the strikeout love life of Teddy Long. So, yeah, there's just nothing there to really watch. He's just completely unsympathetic as a character.
Terrible, terrible stuff. We get the Brock Lesnar versus John Cena hype video that kind of recounts everything they've done. Do you like the video?
Yeah, you know, it felt like they, I think they added in the Edge promo for Monday and some other things that we hadn't seen before. It was the best mix of that stuff that we've seen thus far.
Yeah, I mean, they did a lot better with this than they did in selling the pay-per-view for me, or at least this match at the pay-per-view for me, than they did on Monday with what they did at the end of that show. Good video package. Honest to God, it's WWE production team is a lot like bacon, and my joke for that is I say that because my brother has told me before, he's a train chef, and he said, give me two slices of bacon and a turd, and I'll make something you'll try. WWE production team can take video and take moments that were really not very good and turn them into spectacular moments. We talk about it all the time, but it never ceases to amaze me how good the editing team is at being able to create these packages. You agree?
Yeah, they're miracle workers. They definitely make some very dull TV look pretty good sometimes, and it's mostly because they do the Hollywood style fast cuts and they don't spend too much time on anything. I think that's WWE's problem. They have to fill a lot of time, and it's difficult to make it all interesting. And they struggle sometimes, especially when a lot of their talents aren't up to the task of working on the microphone. That's kind of been Lesnar's problem thus far. So they didn't really feature him on talking on any of the Raws in this promo. It was basically just the pre-tape stuff for him, and that's a good thing.
Real quick before we move on from here, because there was one more thing I meant to ask about Antonio Cesaro, and I wanted to get you. What do you think of his look? He had just kind of plain old wrestling tights and boots, but he had they were like, if you can imagine, knee pads that were pulled up around the quad, so just above the knee, and they were white with like two black stripes. Might have been tape. I really couldn't tell what it was. They didn't appear to be knee pads, but I couldn't tell if it was tape or something else, but for people who didn't see it, that's kind of the best way I can describe it, is knee pads pulled above the knee. It was different. I don't know if I like it. I don't necessarily hate it. It was just kind of different. It was so different, I'm not really sure where I am on it. But sporting the same bald head and whatnot, what did you think of his look?
I wasn't expecting much different. I was surprised by the by those wraps. If that was laced, you would have called it a garter belt. I mean, it was like literally right around his thigh. So,
yeah,
I don't know what to call that. But he didn't look out of place or anything. That was just the only thing that was different. I don't know if they're going to explain that or not.
Yep, we'll see how it goes with him. I'm happy to see him there. I'm hoping we're going to see his former partner Chris Hero, who's wrestling as Cassius Ohno, and of course Tyler Black, who's wrestling Seth Rollins down there as well, Dean Ambrose, who is John Moxley from there. There's just a lot of talent sitting there in FCW waiting to get called up, and if they keep this format, where SmackDown seems to be where these guys show up, we could have a hell of a roster. We could have an indie wet dream roster in just a matter of weeks and months on SmackDown. So, I know you and I have both watched indies for some time. I'm excited about what they're going to have for us there. What I was not excited about was what happened next. We get Cody Rhodes walking backstage, and after commercial, he makes his ring entrance. We get the video that recaps him attacking Kali before the six-man last week's show. And then our sixth match of the night, Great Kali defeating Cody Rhodes in 1:58. Yes, you heard that right. 1:58. Essentially a squash match. I mean, Rhodes got in some offense. He went right in Kali's leg at the beginning and worked it. But Kali came back, hit his chops and slaps, and Cody was able to escape, went for the beautiful disaster kick, or I guess he's just calling it the disaster kick now. But Kali, I guess, was supposed to grab him out of the air instead, kind of knocked him down, and then grabbed him and hit the Punjabi plunge for the clean victory. So to get me excited about seeing Cody Rhodes versus Big Show, you have another giant beat him in under 2 minutes. Who's writing this stuff?
I don't know. I guess Kali got his win back because they had Cody go over him before WrestleMania to put over that he could take down a giant, and that didn't really work out for him. So maybe this is the good omen that he's going to go over on Sunday. I don't know, but God, it really seems like a waste. I don't know. I don't know why you'd put a 2 minute match ahead of a pay-per-view. I guess they were saying that Laurinaitis was punishing him for what he did earlier. Was that what they said before the match started?
I think so, something like that, yeah. Yeah, something about they put him in that match because of what had happened earlier. But, I guess it's not that's been what it was. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I was definitely kind of left mouth agape, you know. Like, what was the point of that? Cody Rhodes is in a world of hurt right now, and I hope they do the right thing on Sunday and get him back on track.
Yeah, it's bad. Like, if he gets beat and beat quickly and beat badly like he has been these past few weeks on Sunday, then I think it's time to ask the question, whose gym bag did he shit in? You know? It's got to be that level of thing at this point. It's unbelievable. We cut backstage where AW, Abraham Washington, but just apparently going by AW now, is talking to the tag champs and Rosa Mendez. He is doing his fast-talking car salesman type sort of thing and trying to get these guys to sign on. He's got a magazine in his hand talking about the travesty they weren't on. They're on the pay-per-view. They weren't at WrestleMania. He needs to, he wants to be to represent them, but he's a busy man, and so he needs to know by Monday. There you go, Monday. He's like, so you got to let me know. And at that point, Ryback walks up and just kind of stares at him for a minute. Everybody stares at him. AW breaks the silence and goes, hey, Ryback. Ryback sniffs and walks off, and AW is in tow, calling out to him, Ryback, wait, let's get together. Let's do lunch. And they went into commercial. I guess we're finally going to see. I assume these guys are going to, quote-unquote, sign with AW, and whatever he's going to build will begin on Monday, wouldn't you think?
I would assume so. Do you think Ryback's going to be a part of that? I don't know, but it seems like he needs a mouthpiece. I mean, unless they're going to do something, different with him on the mic. Because last time we saw him on the mic, he was that very strange character on NXT. So we'll have to see where they go. But I think a male manager mouthpiece for Ryback could be good. But yeah. I'm liking what they're going to do with AW. They need something interesting in the lower card, and hopefully this is a part of it. Monday could be fun.
God, I as much as I like Abe on the mic, I think he's very, very good. I don't want him to be with Ryback. If you're going to put a mouthpiece with Ryback, that's fine, but you need a Heyman-type mouthpiece. You need someone who's going to be more serious. I just think putting him with a guy like AW who is really comedy, and so you end up with a Bobby Heenan type stable that you've got these serious mean characters and this goofy ass manager. I mean, as good as Heenan was, I just never liked that mix, and it didn't work for me personally. So I hope not. And I can't get a feel if Ryback's going to be babyface or heel or nothing. He killed the guy in London who cut a promo about you. I'm hoping to do well in front of my friends and family and that sort of thing. And then this guy this week cuts a heel promo about how he couldn't wait to get out of Grand Rapids. So, I don't know. I think you're right. He needs a male mouthpiece. But do you think Abraham Washington's the guy? Is AW the guy? Or are you like me? He needs somebody a little more serious.
I can't picture who they have who could do it. AW just seems like the logical step. I mean, if he's going to be building a stable, but I mean, I guess I'm agnostic. I mean, if there is somebody more serious, that's what I'd prefer. But I just don't want them to send him out there and give him a mic right away. I think his character could use a little more time just to establish his physical presence before they have him open his mouth.
And he does talk. I mean, he yells. He's kind of got the warrior yelling thing going on a little bit. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, they'll just have him yell stuff in the microphone for a while, and then they'll find somebody to put with it. I don't know. We're still waiting to see what they're going to do with Ryback. I think it's time. I think he's about to jump the shark on these squash matches. Everybody knows who he is, and, this gimmick that they're having people watching backstage needs to play out. I mean, I think we need to see, and I think we will. I think next week, I think they booked things through this pay-per-view, and I think they're going to kind of reset after this pay-per-view is my feeling from looking at it. But after commercials, we get the Usos watching on the big screen. They're both marking out about getting a chance to see Ryback. His opponent, Jacob Kay, is introduced, and Kay cuts his promo about, he hates it here, and he can't wait to get out of Grand Rapids as soon as possible. And by God, he did in the sixth match of the night. Ryback destroying Jacob Kay in a minute and 7 seconds. Cage jumped at him to start. Ryback just shoved him off. And then he did something that was really tough to watch. It was like a big boot, but instead of just kicking him and the kids, you know, going down, he drove him all the way into the mat and kind of stood on his throat at the end. It was kind of a scary-looking spot. I thought I know it was perfectly in control, but it sure did look brutal to watch play out. We get a press slam at that point, and then the big nasty clothesline that Mick Foley talked about in his blog not too long ago, and then, of course, his weird Samoan drop, running Samoan drop type finisher for the win. Again, it's a minute, 7 seconds match. What are you going to talk about? But I'm sold. The guy's a beast. I believe him. I think they built him fine. He's ready to move into his first rookie.
Yeah, I think he's definitely legit. You know, they've established that. You know, he's a killer, so they can move on to something, you know, a little bit more challenging for him now. I think, you know, people want to see, you know, what he can do against somebody who might actually get some offense in. So, yeah, I still think they need a mouthpiece for him, though. I don't think, you know, they don't want to take the mystique off him quite yet. So, give him a mouthpiece and send him after somebody. I think that'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it's time. So we'll see what they do with him next week. We go backstage after that. Well, actually, we get a video that recapped Daniel Bryan and his verbal assault on AJ last week and then her subsequent mental breakdown in her match with Natalya. They cut backstage where Matt Stryker grabs AJ, who's walking by, and asks her if she wants to give an update on her strange relationship with Daniel Bryan. AJ just shakes her head no. He says, well, you know, would you like to make a prediction about this Sunday's World Heavyweight title match? And again, she shakes her head no, tries to walk away, and Stryker says, you know, you've apparently been suffering what looks like a mental breakdown with your match last week. He tries to ask her another question, but Caitlin walks up at that point and, you know, kind of shames him away. Can't you tell she's in a bad place? Get out of here. Stryker apologizes and leaves. AJ goes to leave again. Caitlin grabs her and says, hey, it's me. I'm your best friend. Look, this is a good thing. He was good to you. He did love you. And then she, you know, really over the top goes, he never did anything for you. AJ slaps the taste out of her mouth, which Caitlin sells, looks at her horrified, and then turns around and storms off and leaves AJ standing there looking just, you know, distraught and about to cry and looking crazed. I think she's been the best thing on television now for weeks and weeks and weeks. I mean, and her interactions with Bryan have been fantastic. Here alone, she's been fantastic. I love her. I mean, I think she has been just great television, and this was just more of the same.
Yeah, they both have been great. You know, I think Bryan's been great too, but she has done a great job, you know, establishing this character. And, you know, she played I don't want to call it similar, but she played kind of a psychotic, crazy character, you know, in other places. So I think she might have a good grip on what this role is, and it's kind of unfolding very nicely for her. So I like where it's going. She's definitely, you know, a cut above, you know, a lot of the other divas in terms of acting skills. She's been, you know, she wouldn't look, you know, out of place, I don't think. With just a little bit of coaching on you know, most daytime dramas anyway. I mean, so it's been fun to watch this unfold for her. She's definitely outperforming where, you know, we thought she would be, you know, from 6 months ago.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what she's got, where this is going next. Do you still think she's going to get involved in the match on Sunday? Because I do. I think we get the full heel turn out of her, and she ends up helping Daniel Bryan. I don't know if she helps him win outright or if she just helps him win a fall, but I think she does something to help him. That is my pick.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we're going to see her decide basically the outcome of that match. You know, I fully expect them to trade the first two falls, but I think AJ will be involved in the final one. And, you know, I guess depending on what direction they decide to go, with this, you know, will determine the outcome of the match. But I'm expecting, like you, a heel turn. So I'm looking forward to seeing this match and the conclusion on Sunday, because I think the storyline and the match should both be fun and excellent just based on past experience with what Brian and AJ have been able to do. There's no reason to expect anything but something good on Sunday.
Yeah, just real quick before we move on, you were talking about the match all sudden. You said you expect them to trade the first two falls. Obviously, I do as well, probably Brian winning the first one. But they like to put the baby face down. Any chance, because I said something about it, I expected an 18-second fall again. Jason kind of modified that and said he expects Brian to get the 18-second fall first because it puts heat on Sheamus and puts him down and blah, blah, blah. Do you like that idea of Brian getting a really fast win in that first fall and then them working the next two a little bit lengthier?
I think it makes sense, given, what else is on the card. They're not going to have, the ability to have three lengthy falls for one match. So somebody's going to get a quick fall. I think it would be more interesting from, if you're playing the long game, over the next, I'm assuming they'll get 15, 20 minutes to figure this out. But it'd be a lot more interesting if Brian won the first one than if Sheamus did. Because I think the Sheamus character is the one that actually needs the heat at this point. I think Brian has done more than enough. Putting Sheamus behind the eight ball would be a lot more interesting than putting Brian behind it, I think.
Well, we'll see how it goes this Sunday. Certainly you and Jason will be covering that live. After commercial, we get Sheamus making his ring entrance, and then after commercial, Mark Henry makes his. We get a video that recaps, of course, his win from Raw again on Monday. And then our seventh match of the night, your main event, the only match to break 2 minutes tonight. Sheamus defeated Mark Henry in 11 minutes and 4 seconds. So about four of this was during a commercial break, 3 minutes, I guess, something like that was commercial break. The finish on this comes, Sheamus, Henry had been in control. Sheamus gets a hope spot, almost hits a bro kick, but Henry ducks it and hits the big clothesline. Henry whips into the corner and charges in. Sheamus kicks him, jumps, climbs to the top rope for his battering ram move. But instead, jumps over Henry's head, rolls through, and then turns around and hits the bro kick for the victory. Before we get to the post-match stuff, it was a good match. It didn't mean anything. We'd already seen him on Mondays twice in the same week. Granted, Monday was gimmicked and all that sort of stuff. But, we've seen these two guys hook up a lot over the past 6-8 months. And it was hard to get up for, but it was an okay match.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it definitely met expectations. It was an enjoyable TV main event match, and it definitely allowed both men to get in some convincing looking offense, and they worked hard. So you got to give them credit for that. It was definitely engaging enough that you weren't looking to change channels or anything.
But yeah, it was, not a bad match in the least. And then post-match, you get Daniel Bryan coming out, and he's clapping. He comes out on the stage. He's clapping for Sheamus. Sheamus kind of waves him down and then gets a mic and starts cutting a promo on him. He says, why don't you come on down here? He asked if he was scared that he might kick his head off in 18 seconds, and he says it again a second time, 18 seconds. Which gets the crowd chanting 18 seconds. Sheamus said he's going to beat Brian in Extreme Rules, and when he does, he won't be able to blame AJ for the loss. He said, so the question is, will I kick your head in at Extreme Rules? And then he goes, and the answer is yes, 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 and that's how they close the show out, is Sheamus just chanting, screaming yes with the crowd, and Daniel Bryan, kind of shaking his head and saying no a couple of times on the stage. I'll let you go with this one first. You said at the top of the show that you felt like this took more heat off of Brian than what happened at the top of the show, so why don't you tell us why?
Well, I guess I wasn't a fan of Brian not really saying anything. He basically just kind of ate that old promo without a response. And his Sheamus using his catchphrase kind of rubbed me the wrong way a bit. They're kind of beating that thing to death. And I hope they're not going to burn the crowd out on Brian as a result. But, I was just hoping they would let Brian at least, maintain a little bit more momentum heading into the pay-per-view. Because, they've showed, Sheamus as basically an unstoppable monster ever since he won the title. He's beaten everybody he's been in the ring with, and including Henry very convincingly tonight. So, it just kind of left... left a bad impression on me, just from the standpoint of it made the baby face look a little bit too strong heading into the Extreme Rules show.
That's fair. I think what I was talking about earlier was taking heat off of him. I think it took heat off of the moment more so than him. To me, it's typical WWE stuff. It's what they do. This is how they, they have the heel has a catchphrase or something that he uses. They're going to use it against them. Have the baby face use it against them and whatnot. So I wasn't totally surprised by this. I didn't think it hurt him all that much, especially if he is going to win on Sunday. I think there's certainly a real possibility of that happening. I hate for them to hot shot the title around like that, but it would not surprise me if they did so, just because Sheamus is probably better chasing. But, we'll have to see how it goes on Sunday. I thought that this was, they needed to add a little something to this match because they've done so much of their feud on the front end was about Brian and AJ, and even after WrestleMania it was about Brian and AJ. They didn't do a whole lot to get these two guys together, and they did a lot in one show to do that. I don't hate this as much if for no other reason than because at least they made the focus about this match more so about them and less so on AJ, which of course just plays into my belief that she's going to be involved. Does that make sense?
No, I understand your perspective. They did need to put some focus on on the conflict that these two men have, but the overusing of catchphrase and Sheamus just looking so strong. I mean, both in the ring and generally getting the best of Brian whenever they both had a microphone. It just made the Brian and AJ stuff more interesting in comparison. That was kind of the impression I got by what we saw from all of the night.
Well, we will certainly find out this Sunday. Jake, you and Jason will be covering the show on Sunday. Anything you want to add before we get out of here as far as SmackDown this week or Extreme Rules?
No, man. I think we covered everything. I got nothing.
Well, good. Well, Jake and Jason, of course, we'll be covering that show live on Sunday night as it airs 8 p.m. Eastern time. And if you got some time before that, I'm, again, taking the night off because I'll be working with a local indie group that I do some work with. 4 p.m. Eastern, if you want to check it out, ProWrestlingEvo.com. It's our pre-show live on Ustream. It's free. If you want to check it out, you can make fun of me. That's fine, too. But that's 4 p.m. Eastern at ProWrestlingEvo.com. And then later on that evening, of course, Jake and Jason with full coverage of WWE Extreme Rules as it airs live beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern. And they will be doing an audio for that show as well, but that will be for our members only. If you'd like to have access to that, plus, again, be able to follow along with the pay-per-view coverage on the ad-free version of the site, access to all the audio we do each and every week, as well as the .NET member forum and .NET member blog page, head on over to ProWrestling.net now. Click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up and get you started for $7.50 for 30 days, $5.50 a month, maybe $24 if you take the annual option. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Jake and I will be back next Saturday for the All Access podcast for another SmackDown audio review. Neither one of us are covering the show live on Friday night. I'm not sure. I think Ryan Kester will be covering that night, but even though neither one of us are going to be able to, we will be doing the show for you on Saturday morning like we do every week. So check back again for that. Thank you, everyone, for listening again, and as always, your continued support of ProWrestling.net. Everyone, have a great weekend, and enjoy this Sunday's WWE Extreme Rules. Take care.